Charlie, you were at the Schlossberg Simcha? I don't hear you. Can you unmute?
Okay. I was at the, they had a Simcha in Riverdale.
Wow.
I haven't been there for one day. It's just coincidentally, and I was there.
Wow. Wow. Eli has been bombarding me with letters he's been sending to, I spoke about it yesterday, but you can appreciate it. He is such a sincere, wonderful individual. And, you know, our thinking is the same, that unity is so important, what divides us is so infinitesimal compared to what unites us. So he's bombarding the letters of our good at Israel with letters why they don't give recognition to Rabbi Schechter, Rakefet, and Willett. So I thank him. First of all, he put me up with the big YU people. But I told him I don't really hold that much hope. But just this morning, something interesting happened. I emailed him. The Novominska, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was a big, I use the word, a fan of mine. And I heard this many times, that I once heard a story from a whole group of Agudistim, that someone, he was doing research, and he said to them, have you consulted Harav Rakefet's book? So the guy looked at the Novominska and said, he's like a YU bum, who is he? So the Novominska told them off in front of a whole crowd. And he praised me. So this was years ago. So today I got it from someone who writes for Mishpacha, that someone on the Mishpacha staff told him a similar story about yours truly. So I wrote to Eli, maybe you'll have a little bit success. But, you know, we're caught up in problems. We're going to talk about it today, actually. And I have to be honest and I have to be realistic. I wrote to Eli, and this is a true story, to our Scholar in Residence in Denver, Colorado, 1980. I gave shiurim and spoke all over the place. The Reformed Temple invited me to speak, so I asked advice. They said, look, it's the men's club invited you, and you're not going to speak in the shul. It's an auxiliary. It's not a service. So you know what I spoke about in the Reformed Temple? A lot of frum people came until today. Some people, 40-plus years later, whenever they meet me, they remind me. I spoke about Tarat Mishpacha, and it made a tremendous impression. What can I tell you? Ashrenu Sezachinu. So then they pressured the yeshiva there, and the Rosh Yeshiva, I knew some of them from Lakewood yet, Rav Kagan, Rav Wasserman. And why don't you let Rav Rakefet give his shir in the yeshiva? And you know what they told them? And it was classic, quote, we can't allow our students to see a Talmud Chacham of such stature, pardon me for requoting it, with the kippah shruga, end quote. So, all right, that's what we're up against, and let us accept it graciously and go further. My dear students, I have what I told you, Rabbi Pfeiffer II, but his name is Joshua, not Benjamin. That's, if I told you Benjamin, I simply would. And then if I call you Joshua, I'm just confusing two Pfeiffers, okay? I mean, Pfeiffed, Baruch Hashem. My dear students, today we're in the midst of a tremendous heat wave here in the state of Israel. Today is, we're hitting what to me is a record. I never remember on an April 19th that should be 36 degrees, but the kacha. I advise anyone who has to walk every day for health reasons, go out early. Don't leave it for later in the day.
Record for April
39. It's a record.
Rebbe?
Yeah?
I don't, Rob Bednarz told you he's starting at 11 today.
No yeah. One told me, but we'll speed up. We'll do what we can. I'm fighting battles here of Wi-Fi, etc. Today is April 19th, 2021, and I want to say Boker Tov Umevorach, Shavua Tov, to all in front of me and all watching around the world and all that will listen on YUTorah.org. I want to make one correction. We were speaking last week about the people who worked for Torah Mesorah. And I spoke about Rabbi Beryl Levy, the Chabadnik, who established the fundraising procedures for Torah Mesorah. Later, went on to take over the okay. So I think I said he bought it from Rabbi Goldberg. It was Dr. Goldstein who founded the okay, and he bought it from the Goldstein family, took it over and turned it into a major, major enterprise. I also mentioned in passing that when Rabbi Bera Levi died, his son took over the okay, and that son died just a few months ago from the terrible pandemic that has killed over 3 million and injured and so many others, myself included. The son's name, I don't know, I said Rabbi Sachadov, that's Bells, it's a different... The son's name is Rabbi Dun Yoel Levi, so I correct myself there. I also spoke about how when Torah Masorah got started, they established the Rabbinic Advisory Committee. That Rabbinical Advisory Committee came the Moetzei Gedolei HaTorah. So I got emails, number one, that today it's called the Vad Rashi Yeshiva. I recognize that it's called the Vad Rashi Yeshiva today, but I'm talking about back in 44, and the name that was used for many decades was RAB, Rabbinic Advisory Board. Also, people told me I gave the names of all the members of the original RAB. So people told me Irwin Bunim in his book, Fire in His Soul, about his father, Imus Bunim's book about Irwin Bunim, his father, mentions some different names. So again, I have to tell you that that book is a memoir, and what Amos Bunim did, who I happen to know very well, he was in YU grad, he was in yeshiva in my time, Zichrono Levracha, was a little older. If he'd be alive today, he'd be probably 87, 88, I'm 83, maybe 86. So it's a memoir. When you write a memoir, outside of a memoir called Washington, I know the guy who wrote it, and I know he stopped all his collegiate teaching to concentrate on that memoir. Every fact in there is checked out. So it's the author of Washington calls it a scholarly memoir, underlying the word scholarly. Most memoirs are written what people think so. You see, what Amos Bunim wrote, he telescoped the various names over the years into one. But I'm dealing with scholarship. I'm following the doctorate by Daniel Tzvi Kramer, and a doctorate, if it's done properly, is on a level of pedanticness. So the names I gave you are the original names. What's fascinating is that among the names, if you recall last week, I explained to you, some were Rabbanim, practicing rabbis. Some were Rashi Yeshiva. As time moved on in the United States, all of you know today that no practicing rabbi is respected. Gedolei Yisrael, those are the Rashi Yeshiva. And I doubt very much if you're going to find a practicing rabbi on the Vad HaRabbanim, the Vad Rashi Yeshiva of Torah Masorah today. And this is a development that we've spoken about many times, and it's been written about, and all of you who live in the real world know that the Jerusalem Post has to deal with it and other publications. Rabbanim, pardon the expression, ligin in dread, but Rashi Yeshiva, these are the Gedolei Yisrael. Are there Rabbanim who are Gedolim today? Could be. We're producing a new type of rabbi, a post-sake. But then again, even in YU, Rav Heschel Schechter is a Rashi Yeshiva, not a practicing rabbi. Rav Mordy Willig is already in two worlds. He's rabbi of a young Israel, he's on the Beit Din of the RCA, and he's a Rosh Yeshiva. In the more right-wing world, I don't know of any real practicing rabbi who has achieved status without being affiliated with the yeshiva. There may be one or two exceptions. But all right, this was Torah Umesorah. Torah Umesorah, Mr. Mendelovich, this was his greatest achievement. No two ways about it. He founded it. He saw the need. Eshtat, prepared teachers. You just can't go into a classroom and think you can teach just because you're a master of Shas and Paiskim. Method, love of students, understanding students, psychology. Ultimately, you have YU, the Azraeli writers in the Azraeli school to prepare teachers. I see advertisements here in this building for men, women, how to teach. But Torah, Mesorah, yes, they had to deal with delicate problems. The problem of mixed classes haunts us until today. I had some correspondence with students of mine who graduated Maimonides, live in Brookline, their children go to Maimonides, and this issue hangs fire until today. I was given a link to a recording of Maimonides graduates, and at a certain point, I believe it was back in the 60s, there was an attempt to separate the men and women, and they found the minute you separate the men and women, the men get a better education, the women get less. So this thought was attributed to the Rav, not to separate, to keep them together. Can you keep boys and girls together? Could I teach for the sake of argument the Sugyan Ketuvot, a Sugyan Yevama, the Sugyan Kedushin? I don't know. To me, I don't see myself teaching a class of men and women with some of the very delicate sexual gemaras that one has to deal with in Seder Nashim. All right, all my children had separate education, all my grandchildren as well, and I see already with my great-grandchildren the trend continues. On the other hand, it's very important boys and girls should know how to interact. If you saw this weekend's Jerusalem Post in the magazine section, there was a fabulous article. The whole magazine section was dedicated to Haredi issues. I'm using Haredi contemporary sense. We'll see about that later today. And one of the articles was on erasing women's pictures. And it was a fabulous article that made me feel very good, because these were Haredim saying exactly what your humble servant has said so many times over the years, the decades, I almost want to say over the millennium. Very important. Imagine you teach a girl that her whole purpose in life is to be a sexual attraction, and she should be careful. Men only think of her in terms of sex, and that all men are sexual predators. This is the education of Torah. God have mercy if this is the education. But it's very important to educate love, marriage, sexual tension. I can quote endless gemaras. I think I spent a year on this topic in the Kollel many, many years ago, could be decades ago. I don't want to repeat it now. I have too much more to teach. But how to work out a marriage, how to respect a woman, individuality, a man, a woman, the complementary, the supplementary, the differences. The Rambam, Hilchat Ishut, Perek Tet Vav, Benjamin, Halacha Yutet, Halacha Chaf. I met your wife, I met your children, I see you have mastered the Rambam. Very important. Okay. Rav Shinsha Ferl Hirsch had a tremendous system, which was a system lachatchilah, not b'diavad. Tremendous system. Separate education, but the same campus. What was behind the idea? That the boys and girls would interact going to school, coming from school. In other words, they wouldn't be total strangers to each other. And this is perhaps the most formidable, the best concept we can have in chinuch, how to raise young men and young women, and particularly in this Western world where the world has gone crazy. There's no God, there's no religion, there's no ethics, there are no morals, everything is man-made. I don't have to tell you who would ever dream same-sex marriages, kasha v'yasha. It's beyond comprehension what has happened. In the United States, Robert E. Lee becomes a criminal, take down his statues, Columbus, take down his statues. It's beyond comprehension. I spoke about this last summer. It's a talk that I'm proud of. And every syllable I stand by until this moment. No one has been able to correct me or alter me. Very important. It's a beautiful article. I'm impressed because the Jerusalem Post, under the present editorship, is a leftist journal that has no concept of what Torah is about, what Eretz Yisrael is about. It's beyond comprehension. The majority of people reading it in Israel are religious Jews, and they're subject to such propaganda and nourishkeit, and apikorsis of the most vulgar level and enmity to Ribbono Shel Olam, 70% of children are intermarrying in America, and you're fighting Torah, reform, beautiful, wonderful, women of the wall, praise and elevate, extol. All right, I've said enough. Hashem Yirachem, but the Verma Yosem and Alev should go in. Is there to be a big Talmud Chacham? It's plain, simple mathematics, seeing with your eyes. This is the reality. Without Torah, we have no tomorrow. Okay, now, I want to go a step further. So Torah Mesorah is organized. Torah Mesorah is functioning. Torah Mesorah is doing great things. Once again, Mr. Mendelevitz gets all the credit, but it's a Dr. Joe Kamenetsky, who we're going to spend a lot more time on. He's the one that has the schut that puts Torah Mesorah on the map. We'll get to it, but not yet. Here I want to correct a big misconception. And listen to me very clearly, because this will help you when you study Torah history. Students of mine looked at that famous picture. This happened years ago. May have happened in the Kol, may have happened in BMT, I don't recall. They looked at the picture of the Rav teaching, and this is before I identified everyone, but at least I could identify myself. And I pointed out, that's me. And they say, wow, you were wearing a black kippah, not a kippah shmugah. My dear friends, growing up in America until the Six-Day War, no one ever saw a kippah shmugah. We didn't know what a kippah shmugah was. Everyone wore a regular black kippah. It had nothing to do with your ideological feelings. You went to Bnei Akiva, everyone wore the same black kippah. Sometimes you went to a bar mitzvah, a wedding, Vic Snow was playing his drums, and at the wedding, Vic, they gave out a color. In other words, the tablecloths were blue, the kippot were blue, so you got a blue kippah. Big deal. All right. What am I trying to tell you? You can't judge the era. Black kippot had nothing to do with Mizrahi Agudah. Everyone wore that type of kippah. There's one word today that we use, Haredi. When I came in Aliyah, the word Haredi did not exist in the context it is used today. The word Haredi meant Hared Lidva Hashem, someone who cares about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Haredi meant, into modern times, frum, religious. So you should understand the union of Orthodox Jewish congregations. Their original Hebrew name was something like Igud HaKilot HaCharediot Ba'atzot HaBrit. The union of Orthodox Jewish congregations was called Kilot HaRediot. Among them were shuls that didn't even have a mechitza at that time. Among them were shuls that had the most modern of Orthodox rabbis. But the word Haredi meant from religious. Why am I telling you all this? From 1939 on, the Mizrahi, and again, I'm telling you all this, I know it inside out, but I'm also quoting from Daniel Tzvi Kramer's doctorate, beginning on page 152. The Mizrahi organized in 1939 already the Mizrahi National Educational Committee. It was called Vad HaChinuch HaCharedi. The term Charedi then had nothing to do with Agudat Yisrael or Hasidut or Meir Shearim or Geula or everything we identify it with today. Charedi meant Vad HaChinuch HaCharedi, religious. There was plenty of chinuch in America, chinuch Yiddishists who had no belief in religion. There was a chinuch, a general chinuch, like the day schools, like apolitical. The teachers are all Orthodox, but you're not allowed to tell a kid he can't drive the shul on Shabbos. All right, so there's plenty of chinuch, but this Mizrahi Var HaChinuch was called Haredi, meaning religious. Now, the Mizrahi Vada Chinuch at the outset, remember, they were organized 1939, and along comes Torah Mesorah 1944. For many years, they were rivals. Mizrahi tried to accomplish exactly what Torah and Mesorah was accomplishing. Over the years, they were rivals. Ultimately, Torah and Mesorah went out. None of you ever heard of the Mizrahi Vada Chinuch before this lecture. If not, I see there are some older people listening across the world, so let me say most of you never heard. What was the difference? All right. First of all, Torah Mesorah was only interested in day schools. Throughout the United States, there were many Talmud Torahs. Talmud Torahs were practically totally identified with every synagogue. You didn't have an Orthodox, a conservative, Reform synagogue, temple of any stature if it didn't have a Talmud Torah. Torah Mesorah was not concerned with that. They felt the Talmud Torahs were not succeeding. We need day schools. Mizrahi was involved with everyone. You could be in a Talmud Torah, you could be in a day school. We have to help the chinuch. And the chinuch of Mizrahi was geared towards Eretz Yisrael, ultimately Medinat Yisrael, Palestine by 1948, Medinat Yisrael, and that meant that Mizrahi advocated teaching Ivrit be Ivrit. Ramaz, perfect example. My wife came in Aliyah, was a master of Hebrew, Ramaz graduate. I always joke around that my wife is an example of someone who came in Aliyah knowing Hebrew, and over the last 52 years, her Hebrew was not what it used to be. All right, I'm exaggerating, but you get the point. A graduate of Flatbush knew Hebrew. I remember Nechama Leibovich used to have a lot of hana teaching the BMT boys who were Flatbush graduates because they knew Hebrew. All right, she told them off why they don't come in Aliyah. But Ivrit be Ivrit, this concerned Mizrahi. Obviously, Torah Mesorah was not really interested in Ivrit be Ivrit. Ivrit be Ivrit was okay if the local population requested it, demanded it, wanted it. They were more interested. Any language. Rabbi Aaron Cutler wanted Yiddish. We've spoken about this many times. Ultimately, even Rabbi Aaron understood that you're not going to succeed in America if you're going to insist upon Yiddish. English, what's wrong with English? Our main goal is the kid has to come out of the school a Yerushalmayim. And whether it's Hebrew, English, Yiddish, or some other language, as long as the children understand it. And by the way, this was the Rev in Boston, the famous story that's worth repeating. The Rev had in Boston, there was Mishkan Yisrael. I write about it in Revel, I write about it in the Rev. And it had an advanced Talmud Torah program that even kids who went to high school after Bar Mitzvah came and they studied Gemara. And Reb Shmuel Belkin, while he was at Providence getting his doctorate at Brown University to support himself, taught for the Rav in Boston, in Roxbury, I think it was at the time. Yitzchak, you can correct me if I'm wrong. And the Rav switch the language of instruction to English. And some of the boys, I heard this from Jimmy Gordon, Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi James Gordon, he was in that class, and Rabbi Belkin was the teacher, and the Rav insisted that Rabbi Belkin teach in English. And Rabbi Belkin's English was not exactly Shakespearean, and it was accented. Rabbi Belkin, if you've heard recordings of him, even in Yiddish it's hard to understand him. This was a man that built Torah in America and built YU and built a medical school and could laugh with Einstein, and he couldn't speak clearly in any language, not in his native Yiddish, not in English. And the boys, some of the boys like Jimmy Gordon came from a Yiddish-speaking home. Why does Rabbi Belkin have to break his teeth and break their ears? And they complained to the Rav, or they complained to the other teachers that we want the Sherman Yiddish, or let in Yiddish. And the Rav walked into the classroom. Does anyone have a complaint about the language? And no one opened their mouth, and Rabbi Belkin remained teaching in English. But you understand what was behind this. The Rav felt that kids who talk about the Boston Red Sox in English, halavai they should talk about Abaye and Rava and Rav and Shmuel in English as well. So this was one basic difference between the Aguda and the Vat HaChinuch of Mizrahi. There's another difference. It's written here, I write about it in Washington. It's Harry Merrillis on his website, Emet V'Emunah, quoted from my book and said it was exactly the same thing in Chicago. And here, look, until post-World War II, who were the teachers in yeshiva, in the day schools? You very rarely found a Shema, Torah, and Mitzvot. The teachers were mainly men who didn't succeed in business, but in their youth had learned Gemara. The teachers were mainly great Zionists, Shedibru Ivrit, could give a class in Hebrew, speak Hebrew, teach Hebrew. They really weren't total B'nai Torah. And I remember in Solanter, I've told you more than once, the teacher who introduced me to Gemara wasn't the total Shomer Shabbos. The teacher who taught me for my bar mitzvah with the biggest Hasidic yichus is related to David Twesky, but David doesn't know that. If I go back 70 years, exactly 71 years, he was my teacher for my bar mitzvah. He wasn't the total Shomer Shabbos. Kids paid him on Shabbos. They wouldn't touch the money in front of us, that put it into the Chumash. So now, after World War II, you have the revolution. The Shanghai crowd arrives in America. These people need Panasa. And suddenly, seventh grade in Solanta, my teacher is Rav Geshen Yankelevich. Eighth grade, Rav Henoch Fishman. They didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. But wow, what Rebbeim, what teachers, what inspiration. And I have to admit, I never said thank you properly. Now I'm doing it. If you recall in Gris, when I turned 75, I think it was, I gave a series of lectures, Hakarat HaTov. A lot of people have pleaded with me to redo those lectures. Maybe when I, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll turn 90, remind me, I'll redo them. And when I'm writing now, I'm dedicating a certain part to Reb Henoch Fishman's memory, because he introduced me to the problems I'm writing about. And look at the difference now. You have to decide who should teach for you. It could very well be a school, Benjamin, that was under the auspices of the Mizrahi Vat HaChinuch, would have chosen the teacher who wasn't that from, but a teacher speaks Hebrew, Ivrit be Ivrit, and a Torah Masorah school would have chosen Reb Henoch Fishman, Reb Geshen Yankelevich, Reb Shmuel Feivershevitz, the whole crowd that came over. And it wasn't only in New York, it wasn't only in Solanta, Chicago, Boston as well. The Rav took the creme la creme from the Shanghai crowd. And the basic difference in outlook. There was a third difference in outlook. And I can tell you, with the Deinu HaViyuvda, this goes back maybe 20, 30 years. Kid gets here from Brooklyn. Yeah, finished high school, learned a few years in a Beis Medrash. And the kid was so overwhelmed, he came into BMT, Hakotel. And I remember talking to this kid, he said to me, "It's real." I said, "What do you mean it's real? Israel, Eretz Israel, a Jewish army, Jewish police, we're building a state, buses don't run Shabbat." I said, "What do you mean it's real?" He said, "Well, I went to school in Brooklyn. We never heard about this. And if we mentioned anything, all we heard was this, it was Shabbos in Israel and you can buy pig meat, etc." See, there's a tremendous difference in chinuch, in the Mizrahi schools element, tremendous stress, Eretz Yisrael. We have a land. It's the heart of what we're striving for. Some of you saw the Rav's article where for the first time they published the Rav in translation in the tradition before the latest one, which will soon be mailed out. And now a letter surfaced. I have to compliment Yomo. He played with the computer. We printed it out 5 times more beautiful than the original. But the letter is making the rounds. I thank Rabbi Grinstein for sending it to me. And Makami Horowitz, Professor Horowitz, said to me yesterday, "I want to send you this letter." I said, "I already have it. My Talmud sent it to me." You got to see what the Rav writes. If I repeat it in public, you're going to say, "Impossible." This is not the Rav to speak of. Gula Shlema Mashiach Tzidkenu. Wow. Well, that's the Mizrahi. What's a Torah Mesorah? It's not that they're not concerned with Eretz Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael is a small matter. They're Shmir Shabbat, Kashrut, and Frumkeit, and not going to college, and running away from Api courses, etc. And there was a teacher in she's no longer alive. I knew her from Bnei Akiva, from Shoma Dati Bnei Akiva. She married a Lakeway. And she told the students in Shulamit, "You're going to Michlala, I'm not so happy, but whatever you do, don't take the classes of a guy named Rakefet. He's a Zionist Apikiris." "All right, I'm a Zionist Apikiris. I believe that every Torah Jew, I'm Yisrael, Apikiris Yisrael, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we all belong here." But there's a tremendous difference between the stress, the understanding, the achievement, the goal, the inspiration, the Ruach HaChaya that we impart to our students. And see, this too was a big split between Vat HaChinuch HaCharedi of Mizrahi and Eli Torah U'Mesorah. But ultimately, Torah U'Mesorah went out. And here I want to say something Kramer doesn't say it. I think there's another reason. He attributes it, well, Mizrahi was more concerned with Talmud Torah, Ivrit B'Ivrit, all right. I think there's another reason which holds true until today. Our problem in the general world, the secular world, we who are YU graduates, we who live in the Western world, we're so capable. How many of us are willing to go into chinuch? How many of us become rabbanim and practice rabbanut? Whatever that means, chinuch, Torah, learning, chidushim, writing, psak, dayanim. Here, sitting in front of me are individuals. There's one individual here, could have been a Hasidic Rebbe. Well, he has a PhD, he's in science. Talmud Chacham, learned all the time, but made a living, had to be part of the big world, wanted to be part of the big world. How many people you meet have smicha? The world famous professor. I had a bosom buddy. We went to high school together, we went to college together, we got smicha together, and he became a world famous criminologist. subdivision of sociology. We used to say to him, Bernie, you always were a criminal and you're still a criminal. And I said to him, Bernie, and we were in the rabbinate together, 61. I went into the rabbinate of Pennsylvania. He was in southern Jersey. We weren't that far from each other. And then he's at U of P while he's in the rabbinate. And I say to him, Bernie, he's getting every last prize in the world, U of P, School of Sociology Graduate School. I say, you weren't one of the greatest guys in yeshiva, let's face it. We helped you get smicha, we taught you, we worked with you. What happened? And he said to me, I quote, Ani, U of P Graduate School in Sociology is like a catwalk compared to the Rav Sheyorim, end quote. But you see, we're always attracted to the big world, and we have that capability to conquer the big world. Dove, you had a degree, what were you, in accountancy, right? An actuary, whatever. Where did you work? He ran the OU financial system. All right, we need people like that. But because we have so much ability, so much is open to us, compare it to Torah Mesorah. They ultimately wind up getting teachers, graduates of various yeshivot. They don't have a bachelor's. They don't have a master's. They don't have a doctorate. What can they do? Some of them became rabbanim, some of them became Rosh Yeshiva, some of them became mohalim, some of them became shochtim. Some of them went into the day schools and taught. And they had sincerity, they had commitment, they had learning. Could very well be they lacked the savoir-faire, how to go into the classroom and succeed. So Torah Mesorah constantly had classes, a follow-up to Eish Das, Eish Dat, improve, learn, be a good teacher. And some of them went on to become fabulous teachers, even though they did not have a bachelor's, a master's, a doctorate, even if they had a negative attitude towards leaving the yeshiva world and, in their opinion, wasting time on secular studies. I still remember Abaron Cutler screaming and shouting, quoting the Gemara in Chelek in Sanhedrin, Dva Hashem Baza, if you are Mavatl from Torah. So, you see, Torah Mesorah had something going for it that the Mizrahi world did not. I can tell you in the state of Israel, those of you who grew up here, those of you who know the history, it's not ancient history, but this was the exact same problem. You had great idealists, Rabbi Yogel, Rabbi Neria, Rabbi Bina. These people organized yeshiva and high schools. This was revolutionary. Torah poshet tzura v'velo veshet tzura. Oto geveret b'shinui aderet. And they're trying to work out Torah in the dress, the guise, the language of Eretz Yisrael, of modern Israel. They didn't have enough teachers. Many of the teachers were from the right-wing yeshiva world. They could not find in the Mizrahi world at that time anyone who had capability. You read the newspapers over Chag Atzmaut, this doctor, that general, that soldier, all graduates of the finest Torah institutions, many of them tzaddikim, 1,000% frum until today. But they didn't go into chinuch. Much more the big world, the modern world, much more that we want to do, that we want to conquer. And it was a problem in Israel. Today that problem doesn't exist. That problem doesn't exist for a very happy reason. Nothing succeeded like the Mizrahi chinuch, ultimately for the men, then for the women, the high schools, the ulpanot, the colleges, what you have available today. Today you have so many graduates that there's not enough scientific positions open. Baruch Hashem, you have so many schools preparing wonderful teachers. Baruch Hashem, society today in Israel recognizes degrees, smicha, you get a salary, you make a living, it's become very attractive. And in the state of Israel, we are tremendous idealists. We who live here, I have to tell you, on Yom HaTzmut, I met many of my friends, many of my family, the same reaction I had. From Yom HaShoah to Yom HaTzmut, I was in tears. Why was I in tears? How can Jews still live in Teaneck, in Lawrence, in Chicago, in Hollywood, Florida, Beverly Hills, Toronto, Montreal? We have a state of Israel. Come, build Hitler, what we went through. Look what we have today. Ashrayayin Rat Hazot. And today already we've succeeded in raising young people with idealism. Who would ever dream that today we have first-rate soldiers, generals, pilots, people in the world of high tech, and in the middle, they walk away, they want to teach in a yeshiva. They want to organize a yeshiva. They want to help and go through the faculty of the pre-army programs, yeshiva, preparing you for the army. Go through some of the Hesder yeshiva. You will find people who could have conquered the world in any Western occupation, calling, challenge. But today, Torah. Without Torah, we have no tomorrow. So this is Israel. But we too had that problem. And when you read the memoir literature, how many people went to Nativ Meir and they had a right-wing Rebbe. Some of the right-wing Rebbeim realized who the kids were and adjusted themselves and had tremendous success both ways. Some of the kids were turned off. His Rebbe's pressuring him, do Hatzah, good the cup, you have a good head, go to Panovich. This kid was as distant from Panovich as a Chinaman is from the moon. But these are real life problems. And I've always sensed this, that Lakewood graduates today, so many Lakewood graduates are an outreach call of them all over the world, not just in America, not just in England, in Australia, South Africa. You can go on. And why you fellas? The finest, the greatest. No, they hold by learning. Rabbi Ovadia came back, his first trip to America. Rabbi Ovadia told me, Kol makom shehalachti, hitpa'alti, yesh ele lomdim al ramah, shas poiskim, Rab Chaim Briske, for kulam talmidim shel Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. And he was very impressed. Doctors, lawyers, and they're learning, and what a level. And Rakefet is crying. These doctors and lawyers, they could be the greatest Rashi Yeshiva, the greatest Malamdim, the greatest Machanshim, the greatest Poskim, the greatest Dayanim. And, all right, we need medical doctors. I can't deny it. But you understand the tension I'm showing you. That tension exists in the Mizrahi Committee on Education. It doesn't exist in the Torah Mesorah attracting Chaim Berlin graduates and Teira Vadas graduates and MTJ graduates and Lakewood graduates and preparing them to go into Chinuch and be fabulous teachers. I can tell you one little story. By the way, I don't apologize for yesterday, but I should realize how the mind works. I see Napoleon in front of me, and I wind up bridging Napoleon and the Alter Rebbe into one story. And Mark, you didn't even realize I had a third story there. I bridged into the story what I write about from the Rav, the machlokes between the Alter Rebbe and Reb Levi Yitzchak of Bedichev, the Army of Israel, on who should win the war, Napoleon or the Russians. I bridged three stories together, all from that word Napoleon. But I want to tell you one cute story about this. My brother was a Talmud Muvhak of Reb David Lifshitz, the Tzur Balkan Rav. My brother was Chavruta with Reb Heshi, Shechta with Heshi for endless years. They grew up together. So Reb David would say to my brother, "Du darf sein wie dein älterer Bruder. You should be like your older brother. You have to keep on learning and teach." And finally the day came when my brother said to Reb David that he's going to medical school. My brother actually never graduated college. That's a story unto itself. When Einstein began, everyone was laughing at Jewish medical school. So Einstein came up with an idea. This has to be early 60s, late 50s. Any junior in college who has a certain average will be accepted into medical school. So you didn't need a bachelor's. You saved 1 year of your life. But they got the smartest kids in the United States. The level of the medical school went up unbelievably. So my brother was one of those. He never, do me a favor, make it a drop lower. The big one, right, a drop lower. Okay, so my brother never graduated college, and Einstein, all right, the end story is that many years later, I get a call from YU in New York, the assistant registrar, and he says, "Rebbe, we're looking for your brother." I gave my brother's address in Petah Tikva, and they write to my brother, "We're willing to give you a bachelor's." All these guys who got in. So my brother says, "Fine." And then they bill him $25 for the cloth. My brother says, "Go fly a kite. Why do I need to pay you? I don't need the bachelor's anymore." But when he told Reb David he's going to medical school, my brother told me Reb David, you know, Reb David took him with two hands, his hand between Reb David's two hands, and Reb David said to him, "Hatsu, listen to me carefully. Until now you were in Shas and Paiskim. All right, if you make a mistake in a Psak Halacha, it's not the end of the world. So the Kli is an Eina Ben Yomo, a Ben Yomo. It's Nishkefelech. But as a doctor, be very careful, because when a doctor makes a mistake, it can have very serious results." Quote, end quote. But that's Reb David, that's my brother, that's the world. That's the Western world. And I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. I have seen this for the last 83 years. We have choice. A kid in Tehera V'Das in Lakewood, his choices are much more limited. Okay, this is one point. All right. Then there's the second point, Meisha. And here you have to understand, how did Torah Mesorah begin? Mr. Mendelovich. Now, Mr. Mendelovich is not easy to classify. I taught a number of his descendants, and I can tell you that they're exactly in my world. He himself was not a pure agudist, was not an anti-Israel, was not so involved that there can be no sovereignty before Mashiach Zidkenu. Reb Mendelovich was very open that he had enmity towards YU 100%. But there are reasons for that enmity. There was apikursis taught YU is a college where there's no censorship. Well, we've spoken about this many times. I've lectured on it. It's not for now. I actually wrote a whole letter to America. People asked me, how could it be that they do allow courses on Achara Am at YU? And I explained the Rav's position, Rabbi Revel's position, very similar. But Mr. Mendelovich was anti-YU, but it doesn't mean he was entirely anti the Western world or the Zionist world. But once you get involved with the post-World War II Rashi Yeshiva, take Rabbi Aaron Cutler. No one in the world can say that Rabbi Aaron Cutler had Mizrahi leanings. All right, there's a dummy in Israel named Rakefer who once gave a lecture that had Rabbi Aaron Cutler come to Israel and his family here, he would have wound up in the Mizrahi world. By the way, that same dummy gave the same lecture in Lakewood, and Reb Aaron's grandson said, "You have something there." They couldn't dismiss it. Rav Amital is Rav Aaron's, what is it, cousin, grand-nephew, etc. Many more. Rav Meltzer's whole family, they say Rabbi Sazama was a closet Zionist. But okay. Take Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, very dominant figure. No one could accuse Rav Yitzchak Kuttner of having Mizrahi tendencies. Yes, he was a Talmud of Rav Kook, but over the years you heard Rav Kefet's lectures. A whole year was spent on Rav Kook. He moved, certainly, could even be he moved into a Sakhma position if we're to judge by his article in Jewish Observer, the famous article on the Shoah, the Holocaust. And you take other names. Take Reb Moshe Feinstein. Ooh, Reb Moshe certainly was the most open-minded person in the world, but nevertheless, he was a goodist, not a Mizrahiite. Right or wrong? And you can go on and on. One of the big reasons for the competition and the enmity was that the Mizrahi people who inevitably were YU people, RCA people, OU people, viewed the rabbinic advisory board as agudista. They couldn't feel at home with them. It troubled them. And we don't have to go further than Rabbi Joe Lookstein Ramaz, time and again. He would reprimand, would negate Torah Mesorah, Akudistim, not Zionist, not Mizrahi. And this machloket, this feeling, whether it was correct, whether it was incorrect, it was real. And this too accounts for some of this enmity. Competition, call it what you wish, between the Mizrahi and Torah Mesorah. Yom HaTzmud, classic example, a problem that the Rabbinic Advisory Board had to deal with time and time again. Parents want celebration of Yom HaTzmud. Do you? Don't you? Go to the day schools in America today. Many of the day schools, the further you get away from the big Torah centers, Yom HaTzmud is celebrated, HaTikvah is played. They can be Torah Mesorah schools. But there's a reality. They had to compromise. They had to be flexible. The ideal? Yom HaTzmud is a day like any other day. I don't see the yeshiva closing down in New York on Yom HaTzmud. I don't see any great declaration, celebration. Again, you're hitting basic topics that totally divided up between the Mizrahi and Torah Mesorah. Rabbi Israel Klavan, and Kramer has this, again, when I quote Izzy Klavan, you have to know I'm quoting a prince of an individual. His father was Rabbi Yehoshua Klavan, Rabbi Joshua Klavan, Rabbi Tarik. Professor Tarikin can tell you about Joshua Klavan. His father was a Yudapayish Rav who was filled with learning, self-respect, proper deportment, highly respected in the United States, Washington, D.C., Connecticut, etc. Izzy Klavan was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Rabbi Revel, was in the Rabbanut. They brought him in. He created RCA. He was brought in. He became executive vice president. There would have never been an RCA. When he came in, he brought the Rav in. The Rav said publicly, when they honored Izzy Klavan, no one I feel more at home with, no one I will confide in than Rabbi Klavan, who was, and Rabbi Klavan, who I knew so well, by the way, some part of his family studied right in this kollel. Rabbi Israel Klavan, very balanced, and he said, we can never feel at home with Torah Mesorah In Tool, there'll be RCA Rabbanim on the Rabbinic Advisory Board. You follow? So this tension, this feeling, this difference was there. But I'll tell you what worked to the advantage of, hold on one question. I'll tell you what worked to the advantage of Torah Masorah. Dr. Joe. And we're going to go into great detail. You're going to be very enthralled how I explain his mindset and who he met. You'll see. Dr. Joe, Joseph Kamenetsky, Simcha, he was in the first Yeshiva College graduating class. What year? 1932. Yeshiva College began September 28th. Takes 4 years to graduate college. Joe Kamenetsky, active in Hapoel Mizrahi, was a Mizrahiite all his life. He's the man who put Torah Masorah on the map. You follow what I'm saying to you? With all your complaints and criticisms and critique about Torah Masorah, right wing, Agudat Yisrael, Rabbinic Advisory Board, Vad Rashi Yeshiva, as we explained earlier an hour ago, with all your critiques, who is the man running Torah Masorah, building day schools all over the Western world? Joe Kamenetsky. His presence ultimately enables Torah Masorah to totally win out. You got to go along with the winner. With all the reasons I gave, but this was the Makkah B'Patash. How do we say Makkah B'Patash in English? The icing on the cake. Got it? Okay, Moshe. Torah Masorah, Joe Kamenetsky. And ultimately, Torah Masorah wins out. Now, there's one other factor for Torah Masorah. We mentioned it last week. Sam Feuerstein, Boston. Tremendous balabas. Ohev Torah. Guidance, vision, money. A man who loved the Rav and loved the Baron Kotler. His son, Moshe, Mo, early YU graduate. Very active in the OU. Very active in Torah Masorah. And I, in my humble opinion, the fact that Mo Feuerstein was president of the OU, I believe it was 6 years, could be more. He was the longest serving president of the OU, tremendous influence in the OU. He sort of bridged the gap from Torah Masorah to the OU. It even had an impact on RCA. So that these factors, again, it's not that we're anti-Torah Masorah. If we had a choice, perhaps we would want a Vad HaRabbanim to consist of 21 Mizrahiites and Echveis 21 Agudistim, but this is the reality. It's Torah. They're building day schools. Don't be like Joe Lipstein. Don't criticize them. Don't run away. Don't totally negate them. Don't abrogate them. B'sofa shel davar, they're doing good work. All right, the kid may not be a card-carrying party member of the Mizrahi movement, but he's a Shemesh Shabbos, and ultimately, he's our best candidate for Aliyah. We can talk to him. We can preach to him. We can inspire him. And I think that, take all these factors together, Torah Masorah ultimately, totally won out. And when you speak about the United States, the day schools, you have to give credit to Torah Masorah, to Joe Kamenetsky. Total, complete, absolute Mesirat Nefesh that accomplished today, what we have, you talk of NCSY, who are you reaching out to? It's these kids all over the country. Kids that went to day schools, kids that came from homes that weren't that from. Who are you reaching out to? Who are you connecting with? Who have you inspired? Baruch Hashem, what Mr. Mendelovich started, greatest achievement. Torah Vadas, all right, it's a wonderful yeshiva, but there are more yeshiva. If there wouldn't have been a Torah Vadas, there would have been another yeshiva in its place. But Torah Mesorah, a man of vision and accomplishment. Okay. Before we go further, yeah, the questions. Yes. Ellie, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to know how the rabbinic board was elected, so much so that our could get on.
These, what's the word they use? Anyone here a lawyer? These are self-perpetuating bodies. I don't know if there's a more technical term. I'll explain to you what that means. If I organize a school, and I'm the organizer, I'm the first dean, I'm the first Rosh Yeshiva, and I wanted to continue in my spirit, then outsiders can't intervene. I request who should come in and succeed me. Give me an example, a beautiful example. Yeshiva Har Etzion is the classic example of two Rosh Yeshiva from completely total different backgrounds, and how Rav Amital and Rav Baruch Lichtenstein, Rav Yehuda Amital and Rav Baruch Lichtenstein got along fabulously. Now, you all know about 10 years ago when they started growing older, and I can tell you when you're approaching 80, 75, you're old. I mean, Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, my wife just spoke with someone from social service and they heard her husband is still teaching. They were impressed. Ani modela kadosh baruch hu. When I'm in the classroom, I'm like a kid. But I have limited energies. I can't run around. They once wanted me to go to all the yeshivot in Israel, like they bring over Rav Shach, Rav Willig. I said, I don't have that energy. We'll drive you. So what if you'll drive me? I'm exhausted. I teach. I put effort in. This is, you want, kids want to hear me? Come to Grus. Okay. One second, where was I? We're talking about... self-perpetuate. Now, so, a few years ago, maybe already been 10 years, Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein said, we have to select a new generation of Rosh Yeshiva. And they selected, they're now four Rosh Yeshiva, sharing the responsibility of a lunch foot. That's called a self-perpetuating body. I believe that's the technical term. The same thing with Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. I told you an hour ago, this wonderful Jew, before class began, this wonderful Jew in Baltimore is pushing Agudat Yisrael, let's say, that Rav Schechter and Rakefin and Willig should be elected to Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. There's no election. The Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah have to invite you to join. You follow? So the same thing with the Rosh Yeshiva. They invited people to join. Occasionally, let's say for the Yoshev Rosh, there may have been an informal vote. But it's within the family. It's not an outside. That's how you protect the institution. You want the opposite example? Jewish Theological Seminary. You heard Rakefet's lectures on JTS, Conservative Judaism. They have to be in YU Torah. I don't know if they were given 20, 30 years ago, but they were fine lectures, honest lectures. So JTS, you read their charter, they began as an Orthodox institution. Sadly, they left the word Orthodox out. Why? On purpose. Hakesev Yanet Akol. They didn't want to push away reform money. So they used the word in consonance with tradition. Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebapah, read their charter. But you see, it was Board of Trustees. It's not self-perpetuating. you can decide, you can vote, you can bring in. Who would ever dream from 1887, when it was founded, to 2022, where we are today, that JTS basically is a reform institution. Their concept of halacha is no different than Hebrew Union College. And by the way, this is the fear with Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University, remember, when you're totally part of the university and the board of trustees, who has the final word? Who is the ultimate? All right, Yeshiva has survived in dignity. Don't misunderstand me. But when Rabbi Belkin spun off the yeshiva, you remember 1970, what went on, 71, and the Reitz became an adjunct, whatever they call it, all to deal with the government funding, there was this tremendous fear. Who will know what will become of the yeshiva? If the Rav already was frightened. All right, Rakefin has given stupid lectures that he says if the Rav's wife had been alive, she would have calmed him down, because it turned out time proved Dr. Belkin right. On the other hand, today we face a problem with the Western world. People want to walk naked on the Rehov Amsterdam. How can you stop them? People want to walk naked. My right as a human being. Why do I need clothes? Someone will get up and say, Adam Bechava didn't wear clothes before creation. No? Don't you have that in the Tshuva of Reb Moshe? Haven't I spoken about it over the millennium? Absolutely. Read my writings for Kefet Aaron, it's Chelik Aleph, Chelik Tu, I forget already. I write about it. Reb Moshe had to deal with it. What's wrong? I make a whole case. Wearing clothes is a sign of sin. Benjamin, you're wearing clothes because you sinned and ate of the tree of knowledge. I don't wear clothes. I walk around nude because I have not sinned. I am on a much higher level than all those who wear clothes. What you have today in the Western world, God have mercy. Okay, so that's to answer your question. It's a self-perpetuating body. And that's the key. It's a very important concept. That's the same thing with the Supreme Court here. They have so much power, the judges, that it's almost self-perpetuating. It doesn't reflect the population, the responsibility, the vote, the census, etc. Yeah, yes.
I'm curious how Joseph Kamenetsky, like, if you went to YU,
we'll get
how
there.
He made it to Torah Masoret.
I haven't said one word about Joe Kamenetsky except to let you know he exists. I didn't want Simcha to shoot me down with a brick and say, what are you talking about? There's Joe Kamenetsky.
Must be the 10% of Gruss descendants of Joe Kamenetsky at least.
10%? I taught many of his descendants.
His four great-grandchildren.
Wow. It's a shame they're not here. It's a shame. Mama's ashamed to give lectures like this. Right. The prophet is without honor in his own home. We know that. Okay, let me go further. Now, over the years, Torah Masorah has had three people who headed it. Mr. Mendelovich founded it, but like everything else, it soon became too big for someone to run Torah Vadas and to run Torah Masorah. So that's where Joe Kamenetsky comes in, and the rest of the shiur next week will all be devoted to Joe Kamenetsky. I just want to mention that Joe Kamenetsky headed up Torah Masorah. Give you an idea what happened when he took over in 1945 as the operational head of Torah Masorah from 45 till 1980, the day school movement had about 7,000 students across the United States. By the time of his death in Bayit Vagan in 1999, there were over 160,000 children in the day school movement. I think today it goes on to 250,000 or more. Satmar itself is unbelievably large. They tell me every 8 years Satmar doubles the amount of students in their classes. Noach, the other question is, what percentage leaves afterwards? You know, in New York today, You have, it's already, we spoke about it, it's part of the mayoralty race and the governor race, what's going on already with the Satmar and education and the rebels that have left the fold. But the increase was unbelievable. When Rabbi Kamenetsky stepped down, the person who took over was Rabbi Joshua Fishman. Joshua Fishman, and this is, to me, is just unbelievable, 1980 to 2007. He grew up in the Bronx, was about 2-3 years older than I am, was my sidekick in B'nai Akiva. I knew Josh Fishman, Yoshua Fishman. We were intimate friends, my brother, myself, Josh. This is the Bronx. How many from kids were there? He was a Talmud Muvhak of Reb Yitzchak Kotner. And Josh tried to get me to go to Chaim Berlin. By the way, his grandchildren listened to the Shayur, but they wouldn't touch me. He's not well. I don't know what happened. He asked me to daven for him a while ago, not before Corona. And I can tell you, in order to influence me, he gave me a copy of one of the, what later appears in the Pachad Yitzchak, one of his Maimarim. And he said to me, if you're not impressed with this, what will impress you? And of course, Rav Hutner was a very impressive figure. I don't have to tell you, those who have studied his Maimarim, how much depth there is there. For me, I write about Josh, and I gave Haskama to a volume of Rav Hutner, which came out from Dolphin, and I meet Josh Hutner, Yoshua Fishman is in there, and another friend of mine from that era, and I write about them, that in our youth, all we were concerned with was Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael, but he went on to become the head of Torah Mesorah, had a certain spark to him. But he already was a much more acceptable figure to the total right wing because he already grew up in Chaim Berlin. I don't know how much they knew about his B'nai Akiva background, but he was part and parcel of their world. When he retired, he was succeeded by an individual who I don't know, I've never met. His name, maybe some of you know him, Rabbi David Nochovitz. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Nojowitz. Now, he too, very interesting background. Torah Vadas graduate, Lakewood Yeshiva, and then he winds up in Melbourne, Australia. And Melbourne, he was both head of the Kollel, and he taught gave a shir in a yeshiva high school in Melbourne, and obviously had made a reputation as someone with insight, flexibility, understanding the contemporary world, a good administrator, and he was called back to America, took over Torah Mesorah, where he runs the institution very beautifully until this very moment. And now we have arrived. I just got to watch the clock today with Rabbi Bednish coming in, and I have what I want to show you. Now we have arrived. We come to one of the most golden names in the history of Torah in the United States. When I talk about Joe Kamenetsky, Dr. Joe, it's very personal for me. I'll tell you why. As you know, I'm a third-generation American. My parents were born in Harlem. And I grew up in the Bronx. From Jews were few and far between. I advise you to read Washington, where I describe what Shabbos was like in the Bronx. A spiritual wasteland. Obviously, we had family in America, my grandparents, particularly my mother's parents, had six children. They had children. And of all my family, we had absolutely no religious relatives. Outside, of one branch of my father's family in Brooklyn. If you open up Washington, so if you open up Washington, the first picture you see there is my bar mitzvah. You all know Rabbi Flaum from Lawrence, the white shoe, Tzvi Flaum. So his father ran a catering business and made bar mitzvahs, and they had to make a whole ceremony. You have a bar mitzvah, you have to have a ceremony. And the ceremony was like Sheva Brachas, lighting a cake. And you wanted 14 people, 13 people, and one maybe you lit yourself, the bar mitzvah boy, for good luck, right? Like a birthday cake. The first, Noach, you're looking like quizzically, was this America? This was America. Was this Rabbi Flaum's father? This was Rabbi Flaum's father. I once said I was coming residence in the White Shul. The Balabatim got into Rabbi Flaum introduces me in tears. My Rebbe, he is my Talmud. The first class I ever taught, 62. My first class I ever taught on a high level, 62, YU. And he has a long white beard. He looks like he's 100, and I look like a kid. And the Balabatim already told him, why can't you shave like your Rebbe and look like a mensch? Anyway, this is the first candle was lit. The picture is in the book of my grandfather and my grandfather's aunt by marriage. Now, that's my grandfather's wife, my grandmother's, my grandfather was widowed at the time. My Zaidi's wife's aunt lit the candle with him. That lady we revered. She was the mumma. She was everything. When my grandfather mentioned her name, everyone had gitzitit. His teeth were shaking with awe. When people told me, she used to say, the only home she can eat in is my grandmother's home, Esther Leach Yerkem in Sonnigsein. We can depend upon her kashrut. I know what a grandmother I had. That lady, her granddaughter and grandson-in-law were very close friends of the Kamenetsky family. They were bosom buddies who learned together in Borough Park. So that Joe Kamenetsky and Selma Kamenetsky are not strangers to me. It was Noah and Muriel Daniel, that's the name of the granddaughter married to the Daniel family. And we were very close. They were our only religious relatives. My wife comes from a different family, many religious relatives. They almost all live in Israel. Very few left in America. Those who are religious, all here. Hundreds and hundreds of descendants of the Sohn-Brill family. But in my family, these were our only religious relatives. We were very close. So I don't know, we might have been, you know the family. Who knows of the dentist, Dr. Josh Daniel? Anyone? Josh Daniel is my cousin. He's a, the mumma was his great grandmother, if I have it right. I think I do. Great grandmother. And we knew the Kamenetskys way before I taught his daughters, his grandchildren, etc. What an individual. Okay, now we've mentioned Joe Kamenetsky before. Let me just recap. His years, put him into context, 1911-1999. Came from a very poor home, something like 13 children or 13 members of the family, and his parents owned a home. They sold the home in order to pay tuition for the children to go to yeshiva. And there was only one yeshiva then in Brooklyn, Chaim Berlin, just before Teira B'das. That's how we got the yeshiva Chaim Berlin. From Chaim Berlin, He went to Talmudical Academy High School for Boys, which was the only yeshiva high school in New York at the time, on the Lower East Side. And then he went to the first class yeshiva college, graduated in 1932. Because he came from an impoverished family, he couldn't really go on for smicha. He has a private smicha, but he never would use it because he always felt a little bad, I would say, that he could never finish his smicha at YU. YU is a legitimate smicha. I trust today too, and from what I see, you know, you're serious fellas. I'm the only one in the room without a beard. I've said that more than once. There's a whole slew of people in the room right now, gentlemen listening across the world, and I'm the only Eisvav Shegetz Trumpenik Pushtak here without a beard. I apologize to Rabbi Moshe Wiener, my Talmud in Brooklyn, who's still trying to get me to grow a beard. What can I do? I never grew up. I'm sitting here. The Rav is sitting here. You don't understand that. When I sat before the Rav, I would have a beard. He didn't have a beard. I should have a beard. Okay, Halavai should have Teirin Yeret Shemayim, like we should have. So he always regretted that he couldn't really go for smicha. He had to make panasim and help support his family. Remember we got involved with Leo Young about 2 years ago, a year ago, I forget. He became Rabbi Leo Young's right hand. He ran the Talmud Torah in Jewish Center and ultimately became the assistant rabbi. Without him, Leo Young could not have been Rabbi Leo Young, excuse me. As I've said more than once, Leo Young became a world figure because he knew that Joe Kamenetsky was running the shul. Later in life, he also helps organizing and running Manhattan Day School, the famous day school on the Upper West Side.
Alumni.
You went there. So you owe a thank you to Joe Kamenetsky. He gets a doctorate from Columbia University after receiving his doctorate in education from Columbia Teachers College. They had a respectable doctorate. And I want you to tell you, this doctorate was a bone in the throat of many of the Rosh Yeshiva he had to deal with. Many times when they were having arguments about mixed classes, day schools, everything we spoke about last week, they would throw up at him, who the heck is this guy? A doctorate from Columbia? Fiat de Welt, he's running the world. They let him have it. But he was tremendous, tremendous chinuch, organized administration. And here you have to understand, I'm reading about Rav Shmuel Weisner now. I'm sure you know the name who I'm talking about, the great posek. So I'm reading his biography. My dear student, Rabbi Unger, lent it to me. He tells me what to read, and if he recommends them, it's interesting. Remember, I quoted in class yesterday in relation to Pittsburgh. So, in that biography, Rav Shmuel Weisner is quoted as a young man already, if you're not organized, you accomplish nothing. A person who's organized can accomplish everything. If you're not organized, you accomplish nothing. To be a good administrator, you have to be organized. And they saw the way he ran Jewish Center, the way he ran Manhattan Day School. And they asked him, come aboard with Torah Mesorah. And he was enthused with this idea. And there never was a more wonderful choice made than the engagement of Dr. Joe to run Torah Mesorah. He wound up being not only a fabulous administrator, a fabulous dream man. We'll see, I'm going to quote him. And I advise you, I don't know why anyone is late. If you have to eat breakfast, bring breakfast to class. Don't miss next week. I'm going to quote him word by word. Don't miss next Sunday either. You see what I'm going to do with Menashe Klein. And then we get to the Noda B'Yehuda. Eli, the Rebbe, is not censoring himself. He's introducing you, but I need a note from Ariane that you're allowed to hear that Noda B'Yehuda, okay? No, I'm serious. I need a note from my dear Ariane. Dear Rebbe, you have taught my mother, my father, you were a classmate of my grandfather, you taught my husband's great uncle. I'm not afraid of anything you will teach Eli. It will just broaden his knowledge. No, I'm not playing games. I'm showing an Noda B'Yehuda next week. Wow. But you see, it has to be shown in context, etc. Eli, I love you. Back here. He was an administrator. He accomplished. You know what it means to run a national organization? He was a beautiful choice. And he was a buffer zone. Because if Rabbi Luchstein complained that Rabbi Aaron Cutler is a good at Yisrael, they could say to him, but Dr. Joe Kamenetsky is YU, Mizrahi, Columbia U, educational doctorate. Got it? Okay. End off the class. This is from the Wikipedia article. Okay. Kamenetsky was seen as a true visionary by the leaders of the American Jewish community. At Kamenetsky's funeral in 1999 in Jerusalem, Rabbi Baruch Mordechai Ezrahi, knew who's Rabbi Baruch? The Rosh Yeshiva from right up the hill, right or wrong, the great Hebron graduate. Rav Ezrahi told the story at his funeral of how upon his first visit to America in 1973, he was in the presence of Reb Moshe Feinstein when Kamenetsky entered the room. He did not know who Kamenetsky was, and was astonished to see Reb Moshe rise in respect for this unknown man. Afterward, Feinstein explained that, quote, this man has established Torah in the United States, end quote. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart of honoring me with your presence. Oh, I forgot, I do have a beer today. It's Sphere. So I'm also part of the crowd, but Friday it'll go off, take my word for it. And even the Sphere bit, you don't even understand. This is such a compromise with life in Israel, because the rough shaving Sphere, what do you want out of me? Everyone shaved, whoever would have not shaving. But I'd be embarrassed, because my grandchildren don't shave. My sons-in-law, well, two have beards, the third one doesn't shave, and I should shave, so I'm somewhere on Rabbi Lichtenstein's psak, Rabbi Soloveitchik's psak. I shave on Friday. So Baruch Hashem, the Norelko does the job, and once a week. Okay, my apologies. To reiterate, what did we do today? All right, I'm proud of today's lecture. I've been honest. I've tried to bring you and to feel it, to understand it. And there's no question that the Mizrahi once had a vision. They once were a power in America. They're not a power today. I've said more than once, Mizrahi succeeded, so it wrote itself out of business. The best Mizrahiites went in Aliyah. I don't have to go further than Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. I can give you a whole list of B'nai Akivaniks who wound up building the State of Israel. Nowadays, Mizrahi is trying to resuscitate itself and put itself on the map again. And there is a lot more talk of Mizrahi and Aliyah. I just heard last night a typical Flatbush Aguda family now has a solidified date for Aliyah. And the people telling it to me from America yesterday said no one would believe this was a family, you know, money and money and money and doing well in America, and they reached the decision, Aliyah. All right, and they're open-minded people. Who knows how they're going to wind up here in the State of Israel. It'll be Lekavod u'Tiferet. But These were real problems. There certainly is a Vad Rashi, Rashi Yeshiva, as it gets to be called, or the Rabbinic Advisory Board. These are all rabbinic figures, mainly from Europe, mainly from Rashi Yeshiva positions. This is not Mizrahi, and the whole concept of Rit B'Yivrit, and the whole concept of Eretz Yisrael, and Yom HaTzmaut, these were real problems. But ultimately, along comes Dr. Kamenetsky, a very blessed choice, and he puts Torah Umesorah on the map, and he will speak to the class next week. It's not me, it's Joe Kamenetsky. I'll give you the source. And I will answer, simply you asked me the question of how we could get along with the Rosh Yeshiva and the right-wing world, and you asked it, Binyamin. You'll see next week very well, and I'll explain my own life. It all fits together like a glove and a hand. All right. Are there any questions on today? Yes, Binyamin.
Was a place like MDS, was that part of like Torah Masorah? Like those type of schools?
What place?
Manhattan Day School. Like where?
Oh
like,
yeah, Manhattan Day School. Oh, no, it could be at one point it was under the Mizrahi, but afterwards Torah Masorah became the only player in the town.
So that's why they knew about it.
Yeah, no, and not only...
It wasn't just dealing with the right-wing schools, it was dealing with all the schools.
No. Torah Masorah deals with all the schools. Now a school like Manhattan Day School, obviously could have very well begun on the Mizrahi auspices. Check it out. But ultimately, later, the teachers, the whole atmosphere, the degrees, the teachers being taught how to teach, it's all Torah Masorah. Today, you're not going to hear Mizrahi and the Vat Chinuch Haredi. Torah Masorah runs the game. Why you try to get involved and probably has something going, but compared to Torah Masorah, you're comparing, for the sake of argument, a type of cola, and you're comparing a minor brand to Coca-Cola. There's no comparison. You follow? Coca-Cola's Coca-Cola. All right, so someone came out with a face, give it a name, Joshua's Cola, Benjamin's Cola. No, so you sell a few thousand cases a year. Coca-Cola, a few million cases a year. That's the situation. Okay, so I want to thank you, and I say to my dear students in front of me, just besorah tova to leinu v'al kol Yisrael, das v'danya. Rabbi Morty, Professor Tarigan, can you open it to the world now?
The recording has stopped.
Okay, are there any questions from over the world? Yomo, can they speak? Do you have to do anything here? Are they unmuted?
They can talk if they want.
Okay, good, thank you. Jack? I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. In the background, World War II is happening, and I get a feeling like it must have played some role on the creation of these institutions, and yet, listening to what you describe, it's like World War II really isn't even happening, and yet these institutions are created and growing and successful.
Yeah, but you got to understand, the Torah Masorah begins 44. It doesn't really start to function until 45. World War II is coming to an end. You follow? All the movies that come out of Hollywood in 45, a good percentage center around veterans coming home, heroes. Torah Masorah can now start to function on its own.
During the war itself, you don't have tremendous...
No, the war itself, Reb Aaron Cutler and the others, Reb Lazar Silva, everyone was involved in Hatzalah. By 44, there was no Hatzalah left. I told you that with Reb Aaron Cutler. In 43, he goes to Lakewood. Because there's no Jew you can save anymore. There's no way to get a Jew out of the inferno. And 44 is Torah Masorah. 45 it starts to function. And post-World War II, you now have teachers, you have a reawakening, you have a recognition that there's nothing left in Europe. If Jews are to survive, it's up to America. There's no state of Israel yet. Today, everything is shifted. If Jews are going to survive, it is through the state of Israel. Who would ever dream the day would come that the state of Israel is sending out teachers all over the world? You follow the advertisements for young people, young couples, come and join us. We want to send you to America, to Canada, to South Africa, to Australia, to Timbuktu. 4 or 5 years teach. It's a different world today. But 45, we recognized nothing is left in Europe. If we don't build America, say goodbye to the Jewish people. All right, miracles happen, Kanain Hara. It's unbelievable what happened. And I don't, and by the way, I don't rule Satmar out. I'm going to talk about the Satmar. You just think of Satmar. You'll see he began and what he achieved. And I don't agree. You know, I had that big debate with Rabbi Shalom Gold, who I love and respect. And Shalom Gold maledicted Satmar. He was furious. It was on Yom HaTzmud about 10 years ago. I still remember there was a whole group of Rabbanim there. I can tell you where it was, in Katamon. And he maledicted Satmar because he accused Satmar of destroying all the yeshiva in America, turning them into anti-Zionists. And I said, you may be right, but we're dealing with the reality today. To me, Satmar is our biggest reservoir for Balei Tshuva. We can turn them into proper Jews. Many of them are anxious. I can tell you this. I have many, many, I don't know if it's hundreds or thousands, listen to me in the greatest Satmar world. And many of them are hungry. They spoke with me privately. I know what they're thinking. It's beautiful to be a chassid, and beautiful to be Satmar, and beautiful to be Haredi. But we have to embrace God. God has done miracles for us. This is a reality here. And every Jew that comes makes it better. I remember I said in Lakewood, someone criticized Israel. I said, what are you criticizing? Me? You criticize yourself that you're not in Israel. And never forget my vote. People have repeated it. I said Ben-Gurion's biggest mistake was to make this a democracy. If I would have been Ben-Gurion, I would have put down a rule. I see you're laughing already, Ellie. The only people that can vote are people that slaughter a pig on Yom Kippur, put it into the freezer to Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach, take it out of the freezer and put it between two slices of bread and eat it. Those people can vote. Anyone who doesn't do that doesn't have the right to vote. He made it into a democracy, the whole debate. What did you read about in the weekend papers? My daughter feeds me the weekend papers. I don't read every word, but I go through the headlines. Some articles I read, some articles are fabulous. And a Jewish state and a democratic state, which is more important, democracy or Judaism? All right, I believe it should be a Jewish state, but I also say it should be democratic. Absolutely, we don't want to coerce anyone. On the private sphere, in the public sphere, I disagree. We do have to coerce, but that's my opinion. But it's a democracy. You come in Aliyah, you make the state better, period. People suddenly wake up. Hey, you got something there. Who are you criticizing? Halavai, in 1880 and 1890, the Jews would have come in mass. What can I tell you? Halavai, the Belzer Rebbe should have told everyone, come in Aliyah. What would have been here, it's hard to conceive. Would have been a different state altogether. All right, but others will say we had to go through this whole period to give us, refine us, and make us feel, Baruch Hashem, we have a state after the Holocaust, we have to kiss the ground we walk on. Okay, go ahead. Anyone else have a question?
Yeah, Rabbi. I remember 7th or 10th grade or so, we were learning Yeshayahu Baruch Samach Vav, and on the Pasuk HaChari Gimel Devaro, the Rebbe said, that means Orthodox.
Right, that's correct. That was the concept when I was growing up.
And this was somebody who was Mizrahi, I believe.
That's what I'm saying.
What they called it.
Mark, that's exactly what I'm saying, that the word Haredi, when I was growing up, meant Orthodox. It did not have the connotation of today. When I came on Aliyah, there was no concept of Haredi. Then later in life, I used to say when I used the word Haredi, I don't mean in a pejorative fashion. I mean in a descriptive fashion. Because when you could have say people are using the word Haredi, there's a different word. It begins with CH. I don't want to use it. He's so religious, so people thought you're using Haredi. Today, you don't have to apologize. There's a Haredi generally is used to mean someone, and it's defined, someone who wears special dress, who doesn't necessarily celebrate Yom HaTzmaut, etc. That's the way they define it today. I'll end off with my thought.
What you say about Rav Avadya when he came back the first time, Rav Schachter was quoted saying something to the effect that their task is to create doctors and lawyers who can learn the Rav Akiva Eger, who learn the Ksutz.
Well, that's what Rav Avadya was so proud of. But I'm saying something else, that this is a reality, that these people could have been Rebbeim, Gedolei Yisrael, Poskim, Reshi Yeshiva. But in the Western world, we choose. It could be some of my classmates view me as a low yutzlachnik. I have classmates became tremendous success, world famous, I can give you names, world famous medical doctors, world famous lawyers, world famous CEOs. That's your family, Ellie, your wife's family. And what did Rakefet become? A Malamed, knew a big deal of Malamed. All right, Rakefet used it a little differently. I want to end up, I want to share one thought with you. If I said it, I know I've said it, but I don't think I said it in class. I said it privately. Something happened in Yom HaTzmaut that gave me great joy, great understanding. My one third of my family, my eldest daughter's family, we got together at 10 o'clock in a park in Katamon, a beautiful park, reconstructed, beautiful water, benches. And we were there early, tables were reserved already, but we had no problem getting a table. What we did, I have to ask a shayla, if I was Yotzei or Mongol, we had the bagels and lox, 10 o'clock in the morning, and the park started filling up. By 12 o'clock, it was mobbed. And these were all Eidot HaMizrach people of every age, hundreds, thousands, young, middle-aged, old. 98% of the people, the men, had their heads covered kippot. The women, tichels. Kids running around, tzitzit flying in the air. And Malka and I both recalled when we came in Aliyah 52 years ago, if you stood on a street in Jerusalem and you watched the people walking by and watched the Eidot HaMizrach, if one out of 100 wore a kippah, I'm overstating the case. Now I'll be melamed zchut. They tell me in Morocco they didn't wear kippah in public. But what Rav Avadya accomplished, what Shas accomplished, I stand in awe. And I have a bit of a schud. I taught Rav Avadya's daughter, Rivka Michlala, the daughter who, not the feminist, she's only a religious Zionist. Her husband is a Rosh, he's a Rav in Modin, he's a Rosh Kolil of Yeshiva Hesda, Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva Hesda. I think he's a, if I'm not mistaken, he's an Akotel graduate. I may be wrong, but it should be checked. And I believe so. And what Rav Avadya accomplished, the bringing back the pride to the Svadik world. Ben Gurion took them, and his people don't need a sheikhed, don't need a beard, don't need payah, don't need a yarmulke, don't need this, don't need that. But to modernize you, Yemenite children, I don't have to elaborate. I mean, it's a shame to think that people took children from their parents and sent them away. I'd love to see, are there any children who were raised in America who are dark? I'd love to see, are there any grandchildren, any product? It's overwhelming. And Baruch Hashem, take a look at the rebirth, the miracle. And I have to tell you, I have to bow before Aryeh Deri. I also know Deri. I know him from my work for The Missing in Action. He's a very bright fellow. And I always would tell people about Deri, if he remained in learning, he'd be a gong. He was a Hebron Yeshiva boy. But you got to give Deri credit. They remain a political force. They have, what, 8, 9 seats in the Knesset? And Derry and Shas and Rav Ovadia Matzadik Pa'al.
Wow.
And we walked away. We were just so inspired. Young, middle-aged, old, children, everyone. And if you occasionally, if you saw one Sfardi without a kippah, but the other members of his family had kippahs, you could see at least he's part of a traditional. And this takes me back, Jack knows I've said this many years. I saw this at the airport at Lod, they're carrying a Sefer Torah through the airport. So you see the Ashkenazim, who are not from, don't even know what a Sefer Torah is. Don't even pay attention. Every Sfadi there covers his head like this and kisses the Sefer Torah. So Baruch Hashem. All right, I have just a few things. We're fighting time, but Rabbi Bednesh, I'll be out. I recognized the picture last week. This picture I showed yesterday. Who is this? Jonathan Pollard. His wife had money. When he was in prison, she paid for a Sefer Torah in his honor that he said he would give to Kevi Yosef in Shechem. He gave it last week. This is at the party of the Achnasat Sefer Torah. Who's next to him? Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich. So if anyone wants a copy of this picture, you're welcome to it. I made some copies. To me, it's inspiring. I don't see Rabbi Thor today on the screen. This is a picture of Rabbi Thor with his two children and a young Aaron and Malka. We once were young, no two ways about it. Here we have an article on Rabbi Sacks by Rabbi Yehoshua Pfeffer. P-F-E-F-F-E-R. That's the way you spell your name?
No, P-F-E-F-E-R-N-I.
I don't see an I here.
That's Rabbi Pfeffer from Ramo. He's a diamond.
That's right. Are you related?
We're not related. I actually spoke to him a few weeks ago.
Isn't that something?
But he's wonderful, though.
Who said he's Baruch Hashem?
He's the shul there now.
Well, just because he has your name doesn't mean he's not wonderful. Yeah. You're wonderful and he's wonderful.
He's wonderful.
Could you pull up the picture of Rabbi Thor again? I was going to send it to the family. A little more to the right.
I don't know what
to the right. Okay, got it.
Also, I want to show you. This is the Shabbat section of Makor Rishon. It came out Shvi Shel Pesach. So they have an article here on why a very nice article by a well-known person, Rav Abiyad HaKohen. I don't know where he got the pictures, maybe from the family. There's the Rav escorting Tova. Let's see. That's the Rav escorting Tova to the wedding with Rav Aaron. Take a look at the picture. And the article is on why the Rav didn't visit Israel. So, I Abiyad HaKohen wrote the article. You can have it. Got it? Okay. So Abiyad HaKohen wrote the article, and I was not consulted. I regret that I was not consulted. I'll tell you why. I could have added 2 points. One point that I think anyone who studies me should know, one of the reasons the Rav never visited Israel after 35 is the problem with his family. There was a real problem there. He was very close to the Brisker Rav's family. He raised money for Brisk. He supported his uncle. And Heichos Shlomo. Could you picture the Rav coming to Israel and not giving a shir? Heichos Shlomo then was the seat of the chief rabbinate, the who knows, the future Sanhedrin. I don't want to go into details. I trust you know what I'm talking about. The family put in, this was a real problem for him. Okay, that's one thing the article did not mention. Then there's something else that I know, and I don't know if there are many other people alive who know this. It's everyone is passing on, unfortunately. Rabbi Beryl Rosenzweig, the Tzaddik Levracha, he knew this. Do you know that following the Yom Kippur War, so first of all, Rabbanan Lichtenstein's sixth child was a daughter, Tanya. Tanya was named after the Rav's wife. So Manny Holza, the RCA crowd, the Queens Mafia, who the Rav felt totally at home with, and there was no group of Rabbanim closer to the Rav than the Queens Mafia. So they gave the Rav a hard time. I'm telling you, Manny, I'm repeating what I was told by Manny Holza. I mean, you can't get closer than this to the source. So they said to Rebbe, Rebbe, it's time you visited Israel. And you must see Tanya. Your grandchild looks like the Rebbitzin. Do you know that they arranged the flight? It was then the Concorde had come into existence. You can check out the year by the Concorde. You could fly to London in how many hours? What was it? 3 hours. It was unbelievable how quick they had to get rid of the Concorde. And why, you know why, it made too much noise. But, and then in London, Rebbe, you rest for 2 days, and then you go on to Yerushalayim, you go on to Israel. El Al. They arranged everything. Everything with the travel agent. It could even be it was with David Weingarten. I don't know if there's anyone you can check with, but David is gone already. He built the high school next door in memory of his mother, Hannah Weingarten School. What you call Chorev was built by David Weingarten. Everything was arranged. So the Rav, and we were put on notice, the Talmidim here, the Kohens that were close to the Rav, that we were to take off 1 day a week, give them a day, when we would be with the Rav and do whatever he wants, take him around, show him, whatever he wants, but we would arrange transport and everything. And I remember I chose a day, I worked it out, a day that I'm not teaching or didn't have heavy teaching, or a day that I can tell the dean, I'm with the Rav, go fly a kite, you understand? Because I wasn't a big shot like today, I can be a little bit of a big shot. Those days I still was a slave to the teaching, Baruch Hashem. So I chose a day, others chose a day, and it never worked out. It never worked out because of the Rav's health. By the 70s, he didn't have the ability. This is something you shouldn't understand ever. But at least if you grow older and you do understand, I understand it today at my age. My grandson, one of my elder grandsons, said to me, me and my wife, you do one thing a day, not more. And believe me, my wife and I both understand it very well. One thing, one day. I teach, that's it. I go shopping, that's it. Understand? One thing a day. The rest of the day, right, you sit, you learn, you do what you have to do, but you don't budget out of the house. Mincha Maariv, fine, you go down again. So I would have added that to a beautiful addendum that should have been added to the article. So I added here, if anyone read the article, be aware, the arrangement was worth, made, money was no problem, I don't have to tell you that. The students in Israel, we were overjoyed. The rush coming, we can show Rebbe around. We can. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for your kind participation. I want to thank all those listening all over the world, everyone who appears on the screen. Hal Nachum Lam appears with a bridge above him. I don't know if I'm seeing it right, but I guess you can do many, many tricks with the... was that a bridge? What was that, Nachum? I think you're muted. Now I got to clear out of the room in 5 minutes, Rabbi Betnash is here, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. Bruchim to you. Thank you.